think anybody would love
to. I listen to your opinion. I you're a pretty smart guy. You can be rough and tumble sometimes, but I don't hold that against you. I'm a big boy myself.
Yeah, you're an English guy who's also occasionally rough and tumble. So you,
yeah, yeah. I can hand it out. You got to take some back, can't you? Well, some people don't believe,
right?
That, don't they? But right. So we're live.
Number 456, right?
Yeah, yeah. And why do so many rioters fail? So do your countdown, go into it.
3, 2, 1. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to episode number 456. This, my friends, is our last podcast episode of 2024. I am so excited to announce that John is getting the fuck out of Dodge. He's going back.
I might be.
Whether he is or he isn't, he's definitely taking a break.
I'm oscillating. I'm oscillating, Robert. I'm humming and hiring.
Okay. Well, he's definitely taking a break from me, ladies and gentlemen. So he will not be seeing my glorious mug in the end of the year. He will be doing something else, whether that's catching up on work or going to see family or a mixture of the two. But today, before we go, you know, interesting send-off subject, we're going to do, why do so many realtors fail? Okay. So we're going to provide a few insights and advice so that we hopefully can help you succeed in 2025. And I can't wait to get into this subject. Forgive for those that very small handful of you that log in, look at us on the YouTube channel. Forgive me. I am definitely in streetwear today, which is rare for
you're
me.
Very goth. He's very goth, actually.
I have mentioned to you that I am actually, I don't own any colors. I'm the real deal. I have the earrings, I have the tats, I've got it all. So let's dive into this. Oh, John, when you come back in 2025, I have one of my closest friends, previous co-workers, a guy that's run many sales teams for me, just got into real estate, and I'm probably going to want to do a podcast with him.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Let's leap into number one, because it's a favorite subject of ours, lead generation.
Yeah.
Okay, so John, I've got a lot to say about this. What do you have to say about this?
Well, that it's the key thing, you know. If you haven't got a plan about lead generation, how you're going to get leads, and a lead generation plan that actually works, I don't think you're going to be in the real estate business that long. Basically. I do think you need to be realistic here, though, unless you're very experienced or you've got a lot of social capital, as I call it. You are going to need either a supportive partner or you're going to need a fund to get you through the first probably 3 to 6 months, or probably need both, actually. But at the crux of it, if you haven't got a strategy around how you're going to get leads, if you think your broker is going to get you leads, I think you're deluded. I know there are some brokerages that will provide some methodologies, but I really feel it's going to be down to you in most cases.
Don't disagree. So I'm going to echo a conversation that I had with two young cold callers that called me the other day for an inbound lead for inbound REM. So they're calling me about, they were dual calling me. One, they kind of casually asked me how to do an SEO website. And as you can imagine, John, I get quite a few of these calls where they go like, how long does it take? And you go, I don't know, a year, 2.5 years. All right. What else do you offer? So we immediately started asking me a lot about what I do squeeze pages for them. That's what you do. And I sent this guy to you. He may have called you, actually. They wanted me to do a squeeze page and then do advertising the squeeze page. But in the midst of this conversation, I asked this young man what he was doing to generate leads today. And he had one of my favorite answers that I ever get on the phone, which is like, oh, I'm a cold caller. I'm like, how much do you cold call? He's like, oh, I cold call for 3 to 6 hours every single day. I'm like, okay, so why are you calling me? He's like, well, listen, I've been doing that for 3 years. And while it's generating me an income, it's getting harder and harder.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, explain. He's like, I just can't get a hold of anybody. Number like blocking in, like ways to block your number if you don't already know somebody are becoming more and more prolific. He's like, I do door knock every once in a while. That's getting tougher too. There's a lot of Ring doorbells. You end up holding up your car to a lot of digital things at doors and stuff like that. And it made me realize, John, that the gateways to actual humans, which is what you need. If you're an aggressive salesperson, or if you just like meeting people, there is no stopping you in terms of lead generation. Ryan Serhant says that he generated leads at the dry cleaners. I believe him, because you can. If you're good at striking up conversation with complete and utter strangers, you can make a lot of money in sales, regardless of what you're selling. Having said that, if you're actually trying to get people where they live, on their phone, at home, it is getting much, much harder. Which is why digital lead generation has been a favorite avenue of mine for a while. That's why I keep ringing the inbound doorbell, because you're getting in front of somebody trying to address a question they're already asking. So there's no screening. You're getting their eyeballs, you're getting their focus, and you're getting their attention. And once you've had their attention for a bit, if you were able to collect their information even without them filling out a form, they would be far more qualified, far more likely to be a viable prospect for you. I just believe so, like, very strongly in that. There's other ways to do this. It's a five-touch introduction system. I'm just saying, let's do it with inbound. There's other ways to do it. You can do direct mail. But guess what, John, everybody? You'd have to spend tens of thousands of dollars to do it the other ways. How much does it cost you? If you're starting out new, John, and you knew what you know right now, or a little bit of it about YouTube, how much would it cost you to do your first YouTube video?
I've got a phone. I have to get some form of mic, less than $100 maybe.
Okay. And how many videos do you think you could create on the backs of that $100?
Hundreds.
Okay. And then let's just say we're going to get you an optimization tool to help you optimize these videos. So they're done. You've got, you know, you're uploading them. You want them to get some more attention. How much do you think that would cost you?
Well, the one that we both use now, I think that starts at, if you pay month to month, it's slightly under $20 a month, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So all in, about maybe for your first year, $300-$400.
And the time.
And the time. Yeah, but okay, let's just, again, lead generation. We're having that conversation, John. I don't know that in all the things you've done, have you ever door knocked? Have you ever cold called?
No, not in America. I don't want to be shot.
Okay, no, I'm not trying to put you under any kind of...
No, that was my very dry English.
Okay, so I've done that here in California, and you know what? The young man
we've been
that
doing this podcast, folks, almost 3 years, and still I think it's humorous, but Rob's got used to it and he's up for it, but I still lose him totally sometimes.
Sometimes.
I totally lose you, don't I?
Every now and again you do. Yeah. But here's and I also am so horrendously ADHD. I have to hold on to a thought like a dog that's just caught the bumper of a car is chasing. Yeah. And so I've almost already forgotten what I was talking about. So when this young man that I was talking about, he does 3 hours of calls every day, John. Yeah. So that's 18 hours a week conservatively. So you're sitting here going, well, besides the time, you know, a good video, how long do you think a good video takes you to produce?
Depends what you call a good video, because the videos I knock out.
A video.
I'll do the thumbnail, do some basic editing, probably an hour.
It takes me a lot longer, but still, in either case, I don't think it takes either one of us 18 hours. No. My lowest videos get a couple hundred views usually, and my highest videos get 5 to 10,000. So I'm basically knocking on anywhere from 100 to 200 doors for that 3 to 5 hours I spent, right? And I'm slow. Everybody calls me slow. My team calls me slow. I'm slow. You're fast. If you ever got the same result, you would knock on 100 doors for an hour. Let me tell you, as a professional door knocker, you never come close to 100 doors, John, per hour. You have to run to the doors, and even then you wouldn't be able to do it. Yeah. If you got into one or two conversations, you really wouldn't be able to. That's just knocking. That's not anybody paying attention. So if 100 people pay attention to something you do, you are literally at about 80% more efficiency, or 800%. That is why when we start talking about lead generation, everybody who's listening, watching the show, as a lifetime producer and user of leads, there is nothing more efficient than digital. That is the point of my entire conversation.
Can I say something extra?
Yeah.
I just don't believe in phoning because of the factors that you just said. And I really don't believe in door knocking to some extent. I'm more accepting of the argument around door knocking than I'm around phoning. I just don't see in 2025 it's got much future. Anybody that phones me that doesn't leave a voice message that's not on my contact list, I don't pick it up. On the other hand, even though I run a digital agency, I believe that this is a person-to-person business. I just believe in a hybrid model, but I still believe that you should be out there, not the invisible agent. You need to go to social events. You need to be part of your community, just not totally, because that helps you produce the digital content that will get eyes on it to some extent. I don't believe in people that are solely marketing online, even though that's what I do. But I'm in two sectors. When it comes to real estate, I think you need that person content, but you do that by engaging in events in your community, going to business events, having discussions, meeting people, and then you have your digital outreach as well. That's what I believe in, Robert.
That, which is fair. And English attitudes and American attitudes are different. Having been to England, I can tell you that there are certain things, certain types of things that we accept here as a very commercialized country that they don't accept in England. So you're really showing a bit of your English flair, you know, with these notes. But I love call center work. I loved it. I stayed in it for 20 years. I'm not ashamed of the first part of my career. It just was losing its efficiency to such a high degree. I saw the writing on the wall and I said, I'm going to go do another kind of marketing. Yes. And that's how I ended up where we're at right now. So because it's just not efficient. And my job here is to educate people on the numbers part of it, because there's just no touching the numbers. John and I could show you a way to get in front of, like, and even if we could. So here's another idea. I spent $160 on YouTube advertising, my first expenditure ever, and I got 30,000 views on a video. $160, 30,000 views. If I was better at making commercials, which I'm not, it would have done really well for me. But in the meantime, I got in front of 30,000 people for $160. That's crazy. All right, moving on. We're number two on John's list. Last list, last subject, last show of the year. Did you hear me the first time, ladies and gentlemen? Which is many realtors fail to understand that you are now totally self-employed. John, shed the light on us, baby. What does that mean?
Well, it's been like being a school kid and then going to college, isn't it? You know, school kid, everything, the teachers, they will pest you if you're not doing your work. They will talk to your parents. If you've got parents that care, they will get concerned. Your day is measured. Then you go to college and nobody F cares. Nobody mm-hmm. F cares that you get your assignments in. Nobody F cares if you turn up. Nobody F cares about anything. They don't. They get you into debt, probably. And if you F don't get anything out of your degree, that's your F problem, isn't it? Well, that's the same working for somebody and being self-employed, isn't it? I feel.
I look at like nice analogy. I like the analogy. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I have never understood, John, here's a great exercise. The second that anybody ever becomes a salesperson, I've always said, I bought into heavily when I was 17 years old, and I buy in heavily now, that it's the lowest paid easy work and the highest paid hard work that you'll ever find. And the decision is mine, all mine. And guess what? That would mean that that is basically the same principle. Like I love salespeople that walk through the door when I'm hiring, and they're like, the first questions are about the salary. How much are you going to pay me? I'm like, and in my brain, every single time, every single salesperson, I go, well, nothing. If you're so concerned, if you're not asking me about the bonus structure or the commission structure, and those aren't the first words off your tongue, you're not a salesperson. Full stop. You got to believe, whether it's true or not, you got to believe that you're going to sell something. Like, you got to believe it at the core of your being. And then you got to look at it and go, can I really do what I want to do? Anybody that's walking in and asking about the salary is coming in to make the salary. Like, so it is a terrible, terrible thing. And that should educate everybody listening to the show what this is truly about. When you're a real estate salesperson, even if you've managed to convince somebody to give you some kind of draw versus commission or something like that, man, oh man, you've got no safety net. You're dancing on a tight wire. You will learn a lot of respect for both money and time if you're going to experience success. I couldn't agree with you more, whether the analogy school or walking on a tightrope or whatever it is. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, what a learning experience being self-employed is. John has five more amazing subjects. I'm going to read them to the audit four more. They need to be self-motivated.
We need to go for our break first, don't we?
I know. I'm telling them what they're going to face when they come back. For religiously and consistently using an easy-to-use CRM, doing a great job for your clients, and don't become one of those invisible agent types. So that's what we're going to cover when we come back from break. We will be right back. Did you hear me the first couple of times? This is our last show of 2024. All right. Can't wait. See you soon, everybody. Stay tuned. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to episode number 456. We are back from our break on the last show of the year. And the need to be self-motivated month in and month out is our subject. How do you keep yourself motivated, John? What's your secret?
I don't want to end up on the street. It's a very strong motivation because I live in a small town of Carson City, and every month there's more people on the street. And this is just a small, pretty middle class, not super wealthy, but not poor. And there's more and more people on the street in this town. And if you go to Reno, there's a larger amount of people. And I don't particularly want to be one of them. And real estate, you know, you got all these glamorous shows, haven't you, with these top producing agents and their top producing lifestyle, where the reality is just grind, isn't it? It's just grind and more grind on top of that.
Yeah, so I agreed. You know what? I'm gonna capitalize on what John said. Fear is a big motivator for me too. No, I wish I could tell everybody otherwise, but I'm gonna be really honest with everybody on the show. I'm gonna be really honest with you. I'm neurodivergent. I wake up anxious. I have been homeless twice. I've been in jail. It's generally terrifying. Like, it's just terrifying. And LA is harder than where you're at, if we're both super honest. So fear is a decent motivator on my good days, of which there are less than my bad days. I focus on not, like, I'm just not a money person. So I usually focus on a task list, and I keep myself motivated by having things. I try to make sure that I have one exciting thing on that list, and it doesn't matter what it is, just anything I'm excited about. And it could be meeting with somebody. You've worked with me a long time, John. You know I get excited about weird things. Like, sometimes I just get excited about a particular person you have on the show. And those days light me up. They're really fun to do, those podcasts with people that you're interested in talking to. And I love good conversations with good people. It kind of sends, puts wind in my sails for the rest of the day. And so that's one of the ways that I motivated. I motivate. I find little tasks. And then last but not least, the main task for my business that I do consistently myself is I hold on to the thing that I'm good at, which is sales and talking to people. I've spent a lot of time getting good at it. It motivates me to be on a phone and know that I did an amazing job, probably better than most other people could have done. I like doing good work. That usually gives me a little bit of motivation for later in the day. And I carry that through to other tasks that I really hate, like accounting and bookkeeping and operations. And I can go on and on because I do it all now because I am self-employed.
Add something to it?
Of course.
It's a bit like our last podcast where we were interviewing Steve. And I did like this concept. And that's why I asked him to come on the show. This, are you the favorite or are you the fool? He's very traditional. He's very intense, isn't he? He obviously knew what he was talking about, but he is intense. He's more intense than you.
Yeah.
You could be pretty intense.
I can be,
but I'm not generally as intense as you.
Sure.
But he was pretty intense. But I believed in this concept, are you the favorite or are you the fool? And the video, you know, doing the video, you are already, when they ring you, if you're doing video, you're producing content, especially the video, you are, and they're ringing you, you are the favorite. I'm very good at getting out of a cell, but even I bag the cells if they're watching a lot of my videos, because you are already the favorite.
I do like that concept too. Steve was a fun guest. For those of you who didn't catch
that, fun, wasn't he?
Yeah. You go to episode number 455 and you can check out Steve. He's got a lot of good things to share. He is very proudly one of the very first performance coaches for realtors, if not the first. He claims the first. I wasn't sure about that, but I wasn't going to say anything. Religiously and consistently using an easy-to-use CRM.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I don't. I don't. But I think if you're in real estate, I think writing notes and keeping information about is important, but I think it's gonna help you be more efficient when you're talking to people. But a lot of agents don't follow through. They don't touch base with previous clients. They don't do a lot of real outreach, so it ain't gonna help them. But those that do, it will. I forgot who said this. I think it was Tom Ferry. The best CRM is the one that you use.
Right.
And a lot of these systems, unless you've got somebody in-house that's working with it 24/7 in your brokerage, and that they're so godforsaken difficult to use that nobody uses them.
When I was using, I use CRMs at Sprint. I use CRMs when I was selling computer supplies. I use CRMs throughout my entire career, and I had the simplest system ever. I used last action, next action, and opportunity grading. That's it. That's really what I use my CRMs for. So last action is what did you say and what was discussed? Next action is what did you agree to talk to about the next time? Usually these things can be small. And then depending on the grade, so I forced myself to give the client a score of 0 to 10 based on my perception of the match between us, like how qualified they were, as well as how excited they might be about my specific offer. There's two of those things. And so if like a 10 of 10, when I removed that call, the call opportunity was always at the top of my list because I graded it the highest. It was kind of, and then there was a rotation downwards. I've experienced more success with that very simple system than most people ever have in sales.
Can I ask you about this? I've been thinking about this for a long show. You might have, because you've got more experience in the real estate. I've been at it now for 6 years. Mm-hmm. So I think I've got some reasonable, you've got almost 20 years, mm-hmm. right? There's an insane amount of discussion about CRMs. It's probably your most favorite videos that get watched are your reviews, the CRMs, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of missed terms about what is a CRM. We've got episodes where we've discussed the total wackiness. You know, a lead generated platform is seen as a CRM. I see a CRM as the way in the parameters that we're discussing it, right?
Right.
But there's so much talk. But when you look at the amount of agents that don't ring up old clients, don't do any follow through, don't keep in touch with their old, it is mind blowing. So you've got all this talk about CRMs, which is about, to some extent, mixing lead generation with CRM. And then you've got these industry surveys that show even now that most agents don't keep in contact with their old clients. They just don't do it. What's all this about, Robert?
Well, call reluctance, sales psychology, you know, my fear and anxiety I discovered would put me at a standstill, John. The only reason I'd love to keep telling people bullshit stories about my drive and my motivation. I have legitimately been top 1 through 5%. That's true. What I did though is I learned to use my neurodivergence to some degree in my favor. I walk in the office, if I have nothing to, like if I don't have a list of people to call and there's a cold calling list over here, I'm probably not calling anybody, John. That's just the truth. I'll figure out a way to waste time. And I think a lot of salespeople do exactly that. But if I walk in and I have a small, like little list of people to call with the graded opportunities I already told you about, for some reason, it kind of generated me into the habit, the motivation, the cold call reluctance was diminished. And so I would then hammer out a few hours worth of cold calls. And that made all the difference in the world because the cold calls led to more opportunities, which you grade and put into future days. And it's a system that builds on itself so that you walk into the office and you go, oh, fantastic. I've got 10, 20, 30 good calls. And then you're like, okay, I ended that. I still got an hour left before I've been here for 8 hours. Might as well knock out an hour of cold calling. A lot of really driven, disciplined people do all their cold calling in the morning. I could never do that. Ever, ever, ever. Never, never.
No, I couldn't do that.
So I think that what it's about is this psychology.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about cold calls, am I? I'm talking about people that they've met, might have bought a house with them, they might have done a open house, they might have had a conversation with them. They don't even outreach to those type of
people. I have no idea. A will, a desire to fail, a lack of organization, a not understanding what the basic principles are of like, taking their, like, usually when I talk to salespeople and you're coaching them, right? And you come down to, okay, how are you going to get back in touch with this person? And they look at you blankly and you're like, let's say somebody's doing an open house. You go, you do have their contact information, right? No. What do you mean you don't have their contact information? No, I mean, what do you say to somebody? You got them there. You paid for hors d'oeuvres. They're in the house. And it's like, I didn't ask for it, or I didn't have a signing sheet, or whatever the frickin' is. And you're like,
yeah, can I interrupt? To me, If you're new to the industry, you find a mentor, you find somebody you'd be a junior with. You say, well, for 6 months, I'm not going to have a social life. I'm going to be doing open houses every weekend, Saturday and Sunday. I'm going to be available to this mentor agent. I'm going to do anything he wants or she wants me to do. And I just do religious open houses. And these open houses are for me to build relationships, to get these people's phone numbers, emails, put them in my bloody CRM, and then call them.
Yeah, exactly. Call them, message them, whatever it is, right? But one way or the other, do outreach. And obviously calling them is the best process. Calling them and starting to try to generate a relationship. But honestly, a lot of realtors just lack process, and they lack the intuition that you do as a business owner, which you think is basic, but it's not. It's not basic. Getting phone numbers, names, the very basic stuff that we is the dribble of being a marketer, the dribble of being a business owner. At the end of the day, you and I both know you can't make a sale with if you don't have somebody's contact information. That's basically business 101. Even you in your English frame of mind are going to be like, well, I would at least like your contact information. We can email, we can push out, we can not call them, but we need their contact information to do anything at all, like full stop. So it's basic process stuff, I think, John. Lack of knowledge, lack of training, lack of confidence. Doing a great job for your clients.
This is basic stuff, but it's true, isn't it? You're not going to be very successful in real estate. Some clients are, you'll never make them happy. But there should be a basic line of service. And when you start getting busy, that's when the shit hits the fan.
You already have to edit this one. I started off the episode, Chris.
Yeah. Because that's when your quality standards start going all over the place, because you're busy, you're stretched. But that's when you know you've got some processes that actually work. You only know that is when you're under stress. And being consistent when you're being pushed is the sign that you've worked out these practices, isn't it?
Yeah. It really is. So, my goodness gracious, doing a good job. I'm just going to give one tip here, ladies and gentlemen, to the doing the good job part. You want to know if you're doing a good job, try to get your clients to do a report card. There's no more like dual proactive thing than to ask somebody for a review, to prompt them with a template, to say, will you leave me a review? If they say yes, you send them a template while you're standing in front of them. I don't freaking care what part of the process you're in. If it's a prospect, somebody you've talked to, spent a few hours answering questions, this is a great time to ask for reviews. It's a report card.
I know a certain real estate platform, marketing platform, Robert, that has that survey system built into it, Robert.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Why don't you
let the share it with the audience, please?
Oh, it's something called Bellwright, Robert.
Okay. All right. Well, John is taking off from the podcast, but he's not shutting the doors of his business. So should you want to reach out to him before the end of the year to do to talk to him about a real estate marketing system, call him or reach out. All right. Don't become one of those invisible agent types.
Wow. Nobody's coming to you. Nobody cares. They definitely don't care that you're a real estate agent. Nobody's knocking on your door to give you a commission check. It ain't going to happen. And if you're like 80% of agents, the invisible agent that does one or two transactions a year, which a lot of brokerages love because of the split they can give to these one and two transaction agents. But if you've got a proper career, it ain't going to happen if you're the invisible agent, is it?
Yeah, I agree. Well, ladies and gentlemen, invisible agents, like not being seen, not being heard, I would think that that would be 101, but we've covered a lot of really basic stuff. And honestly, when it comes to real estate agents and why do they fail, I'm going to go back to something incredibly basic that Tom Hopkins said a long time ago when I was actually in a training class with him. It was in the 80s. That's how long ago this was. And he said, the willingness to fail is the willingness to not be trained. And he was talking to a room full of wannabe real estate salespeople. I was actually taking a sales course knowing that I was going to use the information for telephone sales. But, and I had to go out to Arizona where he was training in order to take the class in the first place. It was revelatory though, because he just basically kept saying over and over again that, that being a salesperson is similar to being a doctor. You get out of it what you put into it in terms of your learning. Granted, he was selling training, but he had an extraordinary amount of people in the room that were really successful salespeople that were attending the meetings, his trainings the second, third, and fourth time, some of whom were selling real estate. He was making $500,000 a year in real estate back in the 80s. So the guy knew how to sell. When you're thinking about what can you do and what, you know, do you or don't you want to fail? I'm so sorry, but even more than me and John or digital marketing or anything that's on this list, I'm going to tell you, go back to basics, read some books, listen to some audio tapes, start becoming a professional salesperson. Understand that what you want to do, being trained creates confidence. I don't like lack. Like understanding, John, about what I would say if I knocked on a door. I know what I'm going to say, and I know what my elevator pitch is at all times. Like for inbound REM, for anything, I know what the elevator pitch is for MailRight. I know what the elevator pitch is for half my competitors, right? I know it, and I am not scared to say it. But all of that came down to training and repetition and practice and drilling. And basically becoming very, very good at something like 10,000 hours. There's that old, super old training principle. It takes 10,000 hours to be an expert at anything. I've got my 10,000 hours in, on the real estate marketing side, and actually on sales, way more than that. So that's my advice to everybody listening to the show. Closing it out with train yourself. Read some sales books, read them from sales professionals, read them from people that are not sales professionals, read little eBooks that really famous salespeople have written that are in real estate, because they all have. Ryan Serhant, the list goes on. Read their books. I read their books. I don't like what they say a lot of times. I read their books. You should do, because you want to know what they're saying works. And then you want to practice it if you think it would work for you. That's all I got, John. How would you like to sign off for the year? The year.
Well, I believe in the hybrid system. I believe that you need to get out there and go to business events, kind of community social events, have discussions. Don't be one of those agents that just keeps handing your card out, but just have discussions and, you know, do video, have some digital marketing strategy. And if you combine, you know, you might have to, if you're really new and you haven't got a mentor and you're not doing open houses, which I think you should do, you're probably going to have to buy some leads. You're probably going to have to go to realtor.com and buy them. But I don't think you need to, because I think if as a newer agent, I'll be a mentor with an agent and I'll do open housing. But I would do video. I would have a decent website. I'll get the package up and running and I'll be at it. I wouldn't be doing cold calling, because I don't. If I really thought it worked, I would do it. If it meant success or failure, I would do it. I'll do anything, right, rather than end up on the street, right?
Right.
But I don't believe it works now, so I don't have to do that, right, in my opinion, right?
Right, right. And I find no better way to sign off the show. I hope everybody that is listening to the show will mentally do what I'm going to do and wish you farewell or success, whichever is more appropriate, as it depends based on what you end up doing, whether you go visit your family, where you just stay home and get some stuff knocked out and take a break off the marketing schedule. I have had a lot of fun in 2024. I'm looking forward to 2025, and I wish you well, sir.
Right. We'll see you later, folks. And I'd like personally to wish you and your family a happy Thanksgiving and a happy Christmas and New Year. And we'll see you in 2025.
Same. All right. Take us offline.